This episode of the Red and White Podcast is brought to you by Roback, roback.com, performance apparel company. They make polos, hoodies, Q-zips that are legit just the best fit and the best feel. I know you've seen the little dog logo on people's shoulders. That's Roback. They gave you a 20% off coupon if you use the code REDWHITE. So go support the sponsors of the podcast. Go get yourself some sick apparel. And thanks for listening. I was raised by the wolves. I was raised by the wolves. I was raised by the wolves. 8:34. Run through the night. Playing with your life. All right, folks, we are back with another edition of the Red and White Podcast. After a whole sorts of technical issues, we finally got this thing going an hour after we were supposed to be doing this, but we're here. We are back. It's almost football season. We are a week away from football, although there is football this week, week zero, that we will not acknowledge for some reason. Yeah, state plays next week, though. That's when it matters.
Why don't they just call this week one?
I don't know, because we're stupid. College football is stupid. And everything about it is dumb. That's why. I don't know. It's ridiculous. I'm ecstatic to have football season back, though. Like, legit. This is, I live for it. It's the best part of this, best part of the year. And state opens up at UConn. We'll get into that a little bit later. There's a bunch of other stuff I want to talk about.
Yeah, first. This ain't UConn week.
Yeah, we're not. This is not UConn week. You're correct. I don't even know where to start. I got a whole list of notes here. I'm just going to run down them, right?
Do you want to start with the hot button one, the top issue?
Which one was that? Because they're all hot buttons.
I imagine. The one on the top of the list. I don't know.
Tez Walker.
Yeah.
All right. So Tez Walker, UNC wide receiver, transfers from, and I'm going to butcher this, NC Central to Kent State.
Yeah.
Back to North Carolina. To be closer to his ailing grandmother. Cool. Honorable. Appreciate that. Want to take care of old grandma. Right? NCAA denies his waiver to play this year, and people go ape. We got a letter from old Ray Cooper. And
did you call him Ray Cooper?
Yeah. That's what Hillary called him, Ray Cooper. The governor sends a letter talking about how he's disappointed in their decision, blah, blah, blah. Now, I put this out there sort of trolling because I knew the UNC fans would latch onto it. And, you know, they did. And my point is, I still stand by the point, though. Tez wants to be closer to grandma so he can take care of her. What's a better way to take care of her than not playing football this year and being with grandma? And they're like, well, that's not, you know, that's you're wrong. You're just saying that because it's us. And then the other one I got is, well, he could, you know, take care of grandma better if he gets to play with Drake May and then gets drafted in the NFL. It's like, oh, but that's not what he said. That is not what he said. If he said, hey, I got 1 year to play with Drake May and that's why I want to play with Drake May, I'd respect it a lot more. But instead, we're pulling this BS that I'm going to take care of my ailing grandmother, who's in Charlotte. If you want to be closer to your grandmother, transfer to UNC Charlotte. Transfer to Clemson's closer to grandma than UNC is.
So I will say, according to the ESPN article that came out either this morning or last night from Adelson, I mean, it said that he was pretty involved living with his grandmother. He was like her primary caregiver.
Cool.
In high school. And so I do think that wanting to be closer to the grandmother is important. I could believe the mental stress is real and wanting to be back. And like that makes total sense to me. If their argument was, well, it's BS that he transferred and then they changed this rule or started to reinforce this rule. Okay. I believe that. But I mean, I guess, like, you know, he's saying in these articles, like, his mental health is going to be impacted by this. And it's like, I get it. But you could also go be home closer to your mother, like, or grandmother. You know, yeah, I think the NCAA is like kind of ticky-tack and how they just changed this and started applying it. I guess my big issue with the whole thing is like, I mean, mental health is really important to me. I don't feel like we hear any of these stories about the third or fourth string players that have these issues, right? It's a transfer who's supposed to be very, very good that they clearly very much need on offense. Yes. And it's just weird to see like this aggressive PR campaign, you know, instead of just going through the process. I mean, I just felt like it was just insane when the governor stepped in.
And it's then there's ridiculous. A similar. Governor didn't step in for us ever, right? He didn't step in for Chandler Zavala. He didn't step in during Omaha. He didn't step in and say, I mean, I could probably list a thousand different transfers that we've had and had issues with, or, you know, Ralston Turner getting denied his medical red shirt, right? I mean, there's just a bazillion things he could, but it's a Carolina thing and he steps in and that's fine. Like, I get the issues. But it's all BS because we know the reason he wants to play. He wants to play with Drake May. It's nothing to do with grandma. He's transferring back closer to home, sure. But he wants to play with Drake May this year. That's it. Let's be honest with it. And everybody is lying about everything every time one of these dudes transfers. And it's ridiculous. Yahoo Sports did a great podcast and it was almost all about this. And they called it the whole uncle with dialysis syndrome. Right, because everybody uses this transfer. I got to be closer to home to take care of, you know, whatever. And it's ridiculous. The whole thing's ridiculous. It doesn't matter which school it is. It just happens to be Carolina. It's dumb that it's dumb all the way around. It's dumb that the NCAA decided to step in. It's dumb that they're lying about it, or they're being dishonest. I wouldn't say lying about it. They're just dishonest with their intentions. Just so they can play. Like, I get it, but I just think it's stupid.
They're playing one card like just over and over and over and over, right? And it's kind of silly to me. But the other thing too is like, okay, he wants to play with Drake May. Like, Tez Walker is good enough that if he doesn't play this season, he can go run at Drake May's pro day and he's getting drafted. Like, this guy is supposed to be the real deal, and that's why you're getting this insane full court press from all windows of it, right? But I don't know. Like, to your point, like, Zavala got denied. No one stepped in for that situation. So I just, the same thing happened in Florida State. They had lawmakers lobbying the NCAA. So, you know, the NCAA has got to be looking at this now and saying, okay, well, every single time we deny someone a second transfer, so-and-so's alum is going to write us a letter or be vocal on Twitter. So what's the point of having the rule if you cave to that, you know? And the whole thing is like, I get it. It's weird. Central season got canceled because of COVID. He transferred back. I mean, it's two transfers still. I get it. Like, a season was canceled, but he wasn't penalized for that season, right?
Sitting out does nothing for it. It doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
Other than not playing with Drake May. Like, I get it. I want to play with him too if I'm a wide receiver. But sitting out doesn't – I mean, they need to institute the transfer sit-out rule as it is anyway, because it doesn't cause anybody any issues to sit out and wait a year because you transfer.
Yeah, I'm on a different –
the fact that we have the open transfer in the NIL, it's a whole big can of worms. And I think it's funny that NCAA decides to cherry-pick it and enforce this one, but – whatever. It's dumb and everybody's lying about it. So,
it is what it is. All these coaches complained about it, right? All we heard was, oh, it's look at what happened, blah, 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 blah. It's hard. We can't maintain our roster, yada, 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 right? And then now that it's getting enforced, it's, oh, this is so unfair to the players. We really need this guy. And, you know, I mean, I don't agree with like the you should have to wait a year if you transfer. I just think that's nonsense. Like, transfer play. I don't care. All these guys can find people to play on their teams. I don't feel like there's this mass exodus from programs that's really hurting. Like, look at UNC. They lost, like, I don't know, 15 players to the portal last year. It probably didn't hurt them. They brought in 15 other players. Same thing would happen at NC State. Same thing would happen at Florida State.
You can't have an open a free transfer in the NIL era. Like, they can't work together. It's too much nonsense we've already seen happening.
Yeah, but you know, there's a lot of teams that maintain their core the whole time. Like,
I don't agree with that at all.
Look, there's a lot of dead weight in NCAA football.
Sure, like, they're not going to go anywhere.
There's a lot of people that are transferring, and most of them don't transfer up. Most of them transfer down.
No. I think that's the way it was. You're seeing dudes transfer all the time, transferring up. Look at what Florida State has, the collection of talent they've stockpiled. Look what LSU has done.
Well, no, I'm talking about this guy that just transferred from Florida State or to Florida State, right? He went from Maryland to Miami to Florida State, right? Like, just moving along the same trajectory of programs as far as I'm concerned. Like, I think moving up from lower levels to higher levels, I get that. But what I'm saying is I just don't see that movement from the ACC to the SEC that often, to the Big Ten that often. I think people are overblowing the impact of this stuff. And these guys bring in people who they want to have.
Ask Tommy White what he thinks.
What'd you say?
I said, ask Tommy White what he thinks. Like, it's happening at the highest level.
Who cares about Tommy White?
It's the point.
I'm talking about in football where you have thousands of prospects all the time. I don't think it's nearly as big of a deal as everyone's making it.
It absolutely is, because you don't have thousands of elite prospects. There's a reason Drake May got offered $500,000 to go.
And he didn't go anywhere, right? They spent all their money retaining him, and then they had to go pull a guy from Kent State, right?
He's still the anomaly, right? But again, they're transferring up, and I think with NIL, they're transferring up. The point is that you can't have both. I think they need to step in. You would curb a lot of it if you enforce the 1 year sit out transfer rule with the NILer, because you're going to have less people coming in and say, I'll give you $250 to come right now. You know, because you can play this year. You're like, nah, I got to sit out. I'm not going to come. Like, I'll wait here. I'll get some NIL from my local peeps. Like, it would curb a lot of this nonsense. It wouldn't stop it, because that's going to happen. But I don't think the NCAA has a backbone, because they're going to get a lot more Tez Walkers with alien grandmothers that they need to care for.
Well, let me advise the one person in your scenario. Take that $250,000 and sit out for a year.
absolutely. But,
you know, like, ridiculous. Anyway. I just – my thing is, these guys bitch about it when their key element can't play. But these guys are grabbing all these other transfers, and they're kicking guys out of their programs all the time. I think it's absolute nonsense that they're making this big deal about it. They got to go try a little harder. Whatever. I don't care. I have no sympathy for the millionaire coaches struggling to go find a guy from the JUCO levels or the FBS or the FCS. It ain't that hard. There's plenty of tape out there. Quit bitching. Play football.
Play football. And the ACC is going to play football with some extra teams this year.
Great segue.
Next year. You like that? That was good.
Yeah.
So I have my notes. So we've been keeping notes, and I've had my notes running for about a week now since we last recorded. And the last time, about this time last week, I think it was the 15th, the expansion vote got denied, and it was from Clemson, Florida State, UNC, and NC State. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, we're getting reports that concessions expected from SMU include a willingness to take no. I got my tweets mixed up. Stanford and Cal are set to join the ACC. Apparently, those discussions have started back up again. What the hell is going on? Like, this is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And Ross Dellinger just reported literally like 20 minutes ago, the ACC stands to make $72 million in additional revenue from ESPN if it expands by three, given money concessions from Cal, Stanford, and SMU, which was what Pete Thamel was saying, that SMU and them would not take annual distributions. It cuts it down by about 30%, and that's about $55 million. Excuse me. About $55 million. Will be distributed annually, but that's also after travel expenses and whatnot for non-revenue schools and whatever. So it comes down to like $30 million is what somebody did the math, $2.2 million per school. We're really trying to expand the ACC with Stanford, Cal, and SMU for $2.2
million? Well, I guess here's how I look at it. The ACC in the Big Ten, right, got these great deals where these guys are forfeiting shares to be part of the league, right? So great, you get that money. I guess I'm trying to figure this out of if you, they're getting the $72 million or whatever you just said, is that factoring in all the additional TV subscriptions and things like that? You know, the linear cable aspect, or is this just a broad brush number that ESPN pays out? Like, that's what I'd like to understand. Like SMU, right? That's a lot of TVs down there. So are you getting the
Does
ACC
it still
network
work like that though? That's what
they say about the Big Ten. That's what they say about the Big Ten and the SEC. They say they want to be in North Carolina and Virginia because their carriage fees are like, say it's 30 cents right now. But if it's an in-conference state, it goes to maybe three times that, four times that. And that's why they want to get into certain markets. So it must have some factor.
I just thought from what I've been hearing that the carriage fees are not, it's not what it used to be, right? You're not getting the same reason that, you know, they brought in Big Ten brought in Rutgers and Maryland, right, to get those markets. I don't think it works like that anymore. And maybe not to the degree it was, but I still understand it. Like, it's one of the absolute dumbest things I've ever heard, that the other 10 schools, 12 schools, I don't even know what the number is, voting 11 for it, right? And the four, like, somehow UNC, State, Clemson, and FSU are the only ones voting against it.
Yeah. So
it doesn't make any sense to me.
It's 11 schools that are voting for it, since Notre Dame gets to be a part of the puzzle. I wonder how many of those are voting for it because they know the other four are against it. There's 15 in the ACC when you include Notre Dame with its partial, somehow a partial share, but a voting share.
And that's the other.
I just wonder if there's some cover there. You know, they want to extend these goodwills towards Stanford and Cal from an academic standpoint. And then, I don't know, seems pretty clear to me there's four schools that are really serious about making money in playing football. I know Miami gets like thrown in there all the time as like a serious championship spender, but Miami shouldn't be wanting Cal and Stanford. What value do they add? My thing is like the school should be saying, yeah, we'll vote you in, but Notre Dame has to play an additional game. Or if you make us bring in Cal, Notre Dame has to play two additional ACC games because you're making us bring on this dead weight that's so important to you, Notre Dame. So you're going to play seven games. And okay, you're not playing eight, so you're not a full-time member, but you play seven, you get to go play USC and Ohio State and whoever else you want to build your little independent schedule. But that's what I would say. Like, why would, man, Jack Schwarbrick should just shut the hell up. Like,
Jason Cole reported late Tuesday night that he's heard an agreement for Cal and Stanford to join the ACC could come today as details are coming together, but no word on SMU. Things are close for expansion, but not there. Hang on, I'm still reading this, but not there yet. The whole thing they keep saying is because of academics. Like, we're really going to let academics dictate this?
Yeah, that makes no sense.
It doesn't make any sense. Who's making these decisions? The dumbass presidents, man. It really, I don't know, man. I don't know. I just don't understand why you're pushing hard for it. Why are you pushing hard for it now, but didn't push hard for it 2 years ago when I told you you should have joined with the fucking Pac-12 to begin with, right? I mean, that would have been the right move to get in front of all this, but no, they're just being reactive and blaming it on academics. Academics is not lining your pockets. All these dudes are getting fat cash checks. It ain't from academics. It's not from Olympic sports. Stanford's good in Olympic sports. Yeah, whoopee. We see where that gets anybody.
Stanford's got a massive endowment, man. They can just pay for their sports if they really want it.
Right. Who gives a crap?
I mean, in my opinion,
I don't understand it.
If this
really
goes through, if this goes through, it should just be for football. And if you want to throw in basketball, whatever. But make them fly over here. It doesn't make any sense unless the money from those payouts plus carriage fees, and unless there is way more than $72 million. Because $72 million on the table, let's say there's no travel expenses, which is not going to happen, right? I mean, it's $5 million per team. Like, okay, you can cover a head coach salary for a year with that. Like, I mean, I'm not going to say that $5 million is useless, but there has to be more to this equation. And quite frankly, they should just be telling Cal and Stanford to take SMU's deal. Like, we're not going to pay you for 7 years. Like, you want to come play us and you want to still play sports? Great. Like, you want to make a bowl and get some money? That's on you. But why should we be paying for two schools that clearly did not help the Pac-12 deal? If the Pac-12 deal with the current Pac-10 was $30 million at best from ESPN, and then you take out the two best, well, I mean, you should tell Stanford, yeah, you get $10 million maybe. Right? Like, just be real with them. They're not worth anything.
Tell them to pound sand. That's what I would tell them. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I just don't get Notre Dame spouting off, Swarbrick spouting off about how it's so terrible and it's this great tragedy. And it's like, well, in part, you caused it. You know, a lot of these moves people are trying to make to try and entice you to come to certain places, right? If Notre Dame had just taken itself off the table, you know, we probably wouldn't even have to be dealing with any of the independents. You'd probably have the 8-team playoff by now, right? Because the only reason we couldn't get that is you had to leave a space for Notre Dame and its independence, basically. So I just think they caused this whole thing. So don't tell me how important Stanford is to you, Notre Dame. If you want them in the conference, if you want Cal in the conference, then you need to play more conference games.
Join the conference. Don't play more conference games. Join the conference.
My thing is, like, I would just drag them all across the finish line.
Jim Phillips.
Here, give us your money.
Put your foot down.
Give us your money and don't play in our championship game. Fine.
Notre Dame's got to redo their deal in 2 years, and they just, everybody just lets them do whatever they want, and it is mind-blowing. If NC State, Carolina, Clemson, and Florida State, if one of those teams changes their votes, I will be extremely disappointed. When I heard that we were one of the four that held their ground, I was like, okay, maybe Boo's doing something. If somebody changes, man, for $2.2 million is what it breaks down to be, that is...
Here's what I would do. You want to change the tune? Make it that extra 70. What did you say? It was 72, but then you take out fee travel. It's what, 50?
Well, no. So 72 minus 30% for Stanford and Cal. SMU doesn't take anything for 7 years. Plus travel and travel money. It comes down to about between two and a half to $4 million a year per school.
Here's what I do. I take all that money. I'd set it aside in a pot. And I'd say the only way we're voting on this is if the top four teams every year gets that pot of money. And then right. The other 10 in the conference, or now 12, don't get any of the extra money. Like, if you're going to vote for such a stupid deal and you're not a contender, you never get a piece of this puzzle or piece of the pie. Like, that's the only way I would see anyone join, right? Because FSU says they need more money. They're not going to snap this deal up as is. Right. I don't see what Clemson's incentive would be. It's just, what do they gain? They're already a national brand. And if the two state schools are linked together, then either you have to offer them a ton of money or, like, what's the value in it? I guess I appreciate that UNC didn't fall for the academics argument. And we say that now and watch them be the ones that fold.
That would be par for the course. That would infuriate me.
I don't get it. Sorry. One other thing I was thinking about too, right, is I guess these are the four schools that think they're going elsewhere, right, at some point in time. Because adding these two teams adds more votes, right, and more, lack of an opportunity to either dissolve the conference, break the grant of rights, boogie out however you want to boogie. I just think it's crazy that the other teams are like, no, we got to keep this together as is. Like, I don't think the ACC needs to add anybody and be fine. If they want to get free money like SMU, fine. Give me three SMUs who are going to eat it for 7 years. I'll sign that deal. I don't get giving Cal and Stanford partial shares. That doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't know. I don't get any of it, honestly.
Like, what are they going to do? I mean, are they just going to travel over here the whole time? Like,
pretty much. Right. I mean, that's what it's going to be when the majority of your schools are over here. I liked your original plan a couple weeks ago, where you whack off the bottom feeders in the ACC and get rid of Wake and BC and Cuse and anybody else.
You want to do that and add Stanford and SMU? I'm game.
Yeah. I would be more apt to do that.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, if I was ACC and I wanted to increase my brand, increase my revenue, I would increase the amount of conference games. I would require more intense scheduling. I would tell like Georgia Tech, like, you're not playing Georgia anymore. We can't have you just getting a loss and missing a bowl because you decided to go thump your chest to beat them three times in 25 years. Like, I don't see the value of that. Like, I think there's a lot of stuff like that we could do better. I think we could do it in basketball. I think there's all kinds of stuff we could do in basketball to try to eke out more revenue there, which makes more sense to me in that sport than trying to, like, just travel the teams to the West Coast multiple times a year. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I guess what they'll end up doing is sending a team out there, maybe play there for a week, right? Play there on a Saturday and then play there on another Saturday and then fly back. I mean,
I don't think anybody's that smart that would
probably
logistically make that work. I think they'll be flying back and forth.
Yeah, it's so stupid. I mean, if you're gonna make this kind of deal,
I was just gonna say, then on top of that, Oregon State and Washington State are getting relegated to the G5 or G6 or whatever it's gonna be.
And like, you know what? They'll be fine. They'll be like, they'll basically be the same programs they always were. Like,
yeah,
that's why I don't cry or shed a tear for Stanford or Cal. Like, Cal is in a massive amount of debt, and like, yeah, they have invested in Olympic sports. That was their choice, and that's their fault that they have nothing to show for it from a material standpoint with football and basketball. So I just don't care.
How the hell did Cal land Marshawn Lynch?
I mean, Skittles, man.
And Ben Finley. Two notable Cal alumni.
Also, why is it so? Hold on. Why does Notre Dame get to be independent in this such an important quantity in sports? I have no idea. But Stanford and Cal becoming independent is just a tragedy.
Yeah.
Can't they just do the same thing that Notre Dame does and schedule a bunch of crappy teams and play two or three good ones and be like, look, hey, we're a strong independent program.
Could just let Cal dissolve back into academics. Nobody cares. Nobody cares about Cal.
Cal probably should dissolve. And you know, the thing is, like, I just don't think Stanford will do that. Cal, I don't know. Cal just needs a lifeline because of that. I mean, how do you get $400 million in debt, man?
It's dumb. The whole thing's stupid. Something's going to change by the time this posts tomorrow. But as it is now, they are seriously considering adding Stanford, Cal, and SMU. These conversations have continued, is what people kept saying. I don't get it. I hope we hold our ground. I really do.
Let me ask you this before, and then we'll drop the topic. But what does the number need to be where you say, okay, if it's just a dollars number?
It's not for me. I mean, the dollars, like we talked about before, I don't see any of that money. Doesn't mean anything to me. It's not the dollars. To me, it's the one, you're preventing us from getting out, right? That's the bigger thing, is you're diluting voting shares. And two, it's stupid because you're destroying regional rivalries for an extra $5, and it's all going to the administration and people that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, it's not about the money for me. For me, as a college football purist, like, I want to see the regional rivalries back. I want to see the sport not be just whittled down to whatever the TV networks want. Like, that's just so disappointing to me. It's not about the money. The money does nothing for me. Unless they're giving it to me, then I'll have a discussion.
Yeah. If they were actually paying players, I'd believe all the complaining, right? But everyone's just complaining about the future.
Yeah.
Right? So, anyways, we can move on from
this. So these presidents can get more checks and whatever. On that note, though, I wanted to say, you know, we talked about would NC State leave? Could NC State leave? Holden Thorpe was on some dude's podcast. So the former UNC chancellor, and I got his little audio here, and I'll play this. Maybe.
Those UNC, NC State politics on the BOG are very, very important. And they played probably the bigger role of anything in the way things went down for me. Because, you know, the memories are long, and NC State had to deal with Valvano, and they didn't like the way that came out because the system forced them to fire Valvano. And they also went through the thing with Jim Oblinger and Mary Easley. So when ours came around, the NC State BOG members were ready to get their pound of flesh. And the same thing would happen if for some reason UNC were to get a better TV deal than NC State. It would be, I don't think that could be overcome. I mean, it would be absolutely brutal. So anybody who thinks that UNC is going to go to the SEC and not take NC State with them doesn't understand North Carolina politics very well.
First of all, couldn't sound more of a Carolina guy.
Well, he was employed by them.
I know. Just pure Carolina, just from his name to the way he speaks, just drips.
From the Miata Carolina. He drives.
Yeah, the little Miata. Yeah, I think that's interesting, though. I think it's mostly accurate. I think it's funny they, like, perceive, or he tries to paint the picture of NC State, you know, being the bad guys and wanting their pound of flesh for our academic scandal. Like, wait a minute, y'all are the ones that broke every effing rule in the book, and it's us. We're the problem for wanting justice. Like, the whole thing's just, it's petty, and it's crazy how far back. I mean, we're going back 30, 40 years at this point, and it is ridiculous. I do think it's interesting because a lot of people talk about NC State getting left behind. Like, would State get, you know, left behind? And no, they're not going to get left behind. Like, we've been saying this for a long time. If Carolina goes somewhere, they're going somewhere knowing that NC State's going somewhere too. So if Carolina goes to the SEC, either we're going with them or we're going to the Big Ten. Like, it's the Board of Governors is not going to let that happen. And from my understanding, the Board of Governors is very NC State heavy right now. So we're in a much more favorable place than where we were in the past. So just thought that was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, the only way I see us not going to the SEC or not going to the Big Ten, whatever the scenario is that one goes to the other and both say, whatever, yeah, it's fine. I don't understand the desire to be part of the SEC from a competitive standpoint. I just feel like it's going to be brutal for like a decade, but whatever.
All that money.
There's more money, but right, like, here's the thing. If UNC and NC State are in the SEC, like, we don't get a recruiting advantage there. Like, maybe people would be like, well, you're the SEC now and we're going to go to the football school. Okay, but I would rather we had like a, you go this way, I go this way, but we both have to have a landing spot agreement. I just think that would be better. I don't care which way it goes. And I bet they would, you know, frankly, they just fit in the Big Ten better. I don't even know why they want to be there.
I'd still rather be in the Big Ten. I think it's easier, but we've already beat that horse dead. All right.
I'd rather be in the Big 12. That's easier.
That's true. Power three. On to actual football things, maybe.
33 minutes in, I guess.
Yeah. Sorry about that. That had to be talked about. It's just one of the most ridiculous things happening right now. But NC State has also gotten some momentum on the recruiting trail for next year and beyond, starting with the headliner, Jonathan Paylor. What's your take on NC State's current recruiting momentum?
I mean, it feels good. I mean,
I wish I had a money sound clip right now.
Yeah. Cha-ching, play the money song, whatever. Yeah, I mean, these are the kind of guys we need. Like, it just needs to be a class full of speed and athleticism. We've been saying it for years. I think there's a good example of this where there's a very fast prospect that we haven't offered yet. We're probably going to offer them in like 1 or 2 weeks from now. I don't even understand why we wait. Just go get speed. If they end up sucking, they will transfer out. It's not a big deal. Like Paylor's got a lot of, I guess the floor is high with Paylor.
Yeah.
Right. Cause of maybe his size could be a factor down the road. He's probably, I'm not gonna say he's maxed out in his build, but he does work out like quite a bit already. And, you know, you probably wonder if there's some upside there, but I don't care. Just get speed on the field. I'm hoping that's what we see at UConn, right? Give the token start to the older guys and then get the speed on the field. Let's see what happens. It's just nice. I mean, we're getting a little bit of momentum. We still missed out guys early. Like, let's not act like we didn't get, or that we got every single guy we wanted, but it's been a really good roll. I'm sure the Murphy Center and everyone is just jacked up right now. Especially with the Gus Ritchie flip. That must have made everyone's, I don't know, probably month at that point.
That was my favorite story. I mean, we need Paylor, like we said. Paylor is the elite athlete in the area that you have to start landing. So I'm glad we did. I think it's a game changer. The Gus Ritchie and the UNC conspiracy is one of my favorite all-time recruiting stories. The UNC fans are saying that Dave Doran has masterminded this whole thing where this dude was going to commit to Carolina and then flip. Like, you think, you know, to embarrass Mac is what we were saying. Like, how delusional do you have to be to convince yourself that that's the what happened? The Carolina fans are just, how dare you? Who would ever flip from us to those guys, to Cal College? Why would anybody do this? It's mind-blowing to me just watching the reaction to it. It was less anger than it was when Peyton Wilson flipped, and it was more like disbelief that this guy could leave the blooded sleeping giant to go to the school down the road, the Farmers. Like, it's crazy. And this kid is 2 years away from, he's still got 2 more years in high school, but everybody has just lost their mind. My favorite thing was, this conspiracy theory. Like, how stupid is this? Like, how dumb are we actually trying to be?
I mean, wouldn't the better thing be to do, like, I don't know, like flip them on signing day, flip them at the start of a cycle? It just doesn't really make sense. Like, just
midsummer
caught flipped. Up in it.
Yeah. He's 15. Of course he is.
Yeah.
Of course he got caught up in it.
And if he flips to someone else later, I don't care. You know, I'm really excited we're getting better prospects right now, but I just, with the transfer portal, I'm a little bit more disconnected from recruiting.
Yeah.
I'm not getting wrapped up in the wins and losses there. Guys are going to show up. I want to see who's actually on the field. And, you know, I guess I still hold up hope for, who was our wide receiver from the last cycle that went to Ohio State?
Noah Rogers coming
Noah
home.
Noah Rogers, yeah.
Every time Rogers comes up, that's my favorite.
Yeah, he's always there. But I don't know, man. I just used to be so jazzed up about recruiting, and then I just woke up one day and I was like, these dudes are like 16, 17, 18. Why do I care about this? Just win games. I know it's all correlated, right? But just win games. I'll be excited when they're on the field.
That's what we've been saying for the longest time. Get your elite level skill players from high school. Get everybody else from the transfer portal. Get your big guys who have been in a program somewhere developing. Like, especially you're not playing a freshman offensive lineman, defensive lineman.
Well, we might this year.
Yeah. Just go get somebody else. I mean, it's silly. Did you PodChat put out our top 25? We got a bunch of votes together. Put out our top 25, the usual top Georgia, Michigan, Ohio State. I think it's actually a pretty spot on top 25, minus a few maybe omissions. But we've got State 21, Ole Miss 22, Tulane 23, Carolina 24, and Iowa 25. Did you vote in the poll?
No, I started filling it out. Dude, I have to say, man, filling out those top 25s, it gets tough after, I don't know, five, yeah, six.
It's like 10. Eight. It's hard, especially preseason. Especially preseason.
It all starts blurring together, and then it's like, okay, am I just letting bias come over? And so I started filling it out, and then I said, man, you know, I'm doing this on the phone. It's really hard to scroll through all these teams. And so I said, I'm just going to get it on week one after I get a lot, or actually week zero, I guess. And after we get a couple games in and we can really judge. I just wish top 25s came out like four games into the season.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, there's, I can't remember what people called it, but you know, that preseason vote that just holds teams up there despite losses, right? And then the second they get a decent win, okay, yeah, you fell from 5th to 12th to 18th, but oh, you got a win, so now you're a 12th again. I hate that, man.
Yeah. NC State put up their new scoreboard and sound system. They put out a video today, and supposedly sound system, you can hear it down the block, crystal clear, so that'll be good. No more blaring Pork Patrol ads with crackling speakers, and yeah, the scoreboard looks awesome, looks pretty huge. It should really up the experience at Carter Finley with, you know, the LEDs and whatnot. I still just want to hook up my Xbox, that thing, and just play Apex Legends on there, or Mario Kart or something. It'd be so much fun.
Man, you don't want to play Baldur's Gate 3 on there? You want a little D&D action?
All y'all nerds talking about it in the pod chat, and I have no idea what it is. I know it's supposed to be a good game, but
yeah,
no. I want to play a game on there. That's a good idea for you Savage Wolves listening to this. Auction off like a night of Xbox on the scoreboard or something. That would be fun as crap.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. Awesome.
Yeah. Like Mario Kart
races. Now, how would you do it, Evan? Would you have your little Xbox out there with you on the field on like the 30, and then long optical cable going up there? Like,
you would have to, yeah.
Oh, what's the lag going to be like? That's my question.
That would be amazing. It would be amazing. Yeah, playing from Dave's office on the other end of the field.
they should auction off like a Madden tournament or something on it. NCAA's back this year, right?
2024, supposedly.
2024, yeah. That's what I would do. Auction off your opportunity to crack that thing open, and that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's pretty awesome. Speaking of Savage Wolves, they put out a thing earlier I thought was pretty cool. I'll mention it. They are auctioning off a experience to ride. Where is this? I'm going to read this thing. Ready for once-in-a-lifetime experience, we're auctioning off three pairs of tickets to fly with the Wolfpack to take on Connecticut on August 31st. Everything you need to have a great time is included. So team bus to the airport, fly with the team to UConn, team bus to the hotel, two tickets and a ride with the team to the game, bus back to the hotel, and flight home. Like, that's pretty badass for me. Like, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I give the Savage Wolves some credit. They're doing the right things there.
Yeah, I saw they put it on IPS. They kind of floated the idea. And so there must have been a good enough reaction there to maybe give them some confidence to do it. But yeah, that's the thing is, like, you know, the only thing I would recommend is it's great to do auctions and it kind of, you know, generates excitement. But, you know, if you just allot the opportunity to buy these things, like the guys who don't win the auction, or that, you know, once it gets up to a certain price, have just no opportunity to play, you know, giving them the opportunity to buy on-field access for the tunnel and things like that, or going through the Murphy Center, I think that would be a smart play. Like, keep doing these auctions for these big, cool ones, right? Or these raffles.
You're going to get there.
What'd you say?
They're going to get there. Stop being nitpicky. They're going to get there. They've just started doing some of these things that are good. They're going to evolve. That's fine.
I'm telling you how to improve it right away.
Yeah, we've been saying that for a long time. Like, I think it's and they're finally doing these experience-based things. I think they're going to keep getting better.
Yeah.
I tip my hat to Savage Wolves. I think they're doing a good job. Big Game Boomer put out his final ACC predictions. And he's got Florida State, Clemson, Pitt, NC State, Duke, Louisville, BC, Carolina at 8, Virginia Tech, Syracuse, Miami, GT, Wake Forest, and Virginia. What do you think of Boomer's predictions?
He had Pitt ahead of us. Is that right?
Pitt at 3, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with the Djurkovic factor there. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I'm really skeptical of UNC. So it makes sense to me that they'd be further back. I just think it's just very eerie, or just someone made a good comparison to.
All right, don't steal my line. I'm gonna go.
Okay.
No, because this, you're exactly right. So in the pod chat, somebody put this out the other day, and I bookmarked it because I thought it was super interesting, and I hadn't put it together like that. But we've been discussing it for a while now, and he said UNC is 2002 NC State. I'm going to read this, and I asked him why. Compare 2002 NC State to 2022 UNC. On fire, media darling, a surprise team, winning a lot of close games, brutal end to the season. During the offseason, lose a ton of key pieces, except the Heisman candidate quarterback who's undoubtedly going to be a high draft pick in the spring. New offensive coordinator, lots of coaching turnover, lots of highly recruited players on defense who haven't produced yet, plus plenty of games in September that where they could easily finish 2-2 or worse. Lots of parallels. And I started thinking about that. I was like, holy crap, he's dead on. No, he's dead right. What'd you think about that comparison?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me. I just think the whole thing about UNC is, I get Drake May is a good quarterback, but Phil Longo was the right kind of OC for him as well. And
right.
Just imagining that just continues when you go back and look at all of the close games. Like, I mean, their end of game luck was extremely high last year. And I don't know why you should assume that it wouldn't revert slightly, especially after you saw what was it, the last four games were lost. So to me, I think it's a really good comparison. And I don't know. I just feel like there's just really lazy takes out there, you know, with the, you know, Drake May for Heisman. Okay. But yeah, you need to go back and watch those games and see how he was piling those stats up, right? Like, it was designed for throwing touchdowns. The new offense, not necessarily. And in fact, like I was listening to an Inside Carolina podcast the other day, and they were talking about in scrimmage, they only had three explosive plays, and they were like, wow, the defense must be really good, or maybe the offense isn't very good anymore. So if you take away their explosive play potential, I mean, why would you think they're going to have a big year? And it just makes sense to me. So yeah, it's, I don't know if it's like necessarily, like, you could probably find other comparisons to other teams. It makes sense, right? Where you have this returning stud, you think things are going to be great. Sometimes it's just lightning in a bottle that one year. And that one stud gets to go on. I think we were talking about it last year, right? I feel like a NFL caliber quarterback, regardless of level, can kind of get you 8 wins right away. It's, can the rest of the team get you the other 4 that matter? And right. Most of the time they can't.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. There's a lot of comparisons. Like, we thought about this in, what was it, Sam Howell's last year and the year before that. Like, there's a lot of parallels between State and Carolina teams over, I think, especially in the last 10 years. They've been really close, but I think the parallels with the Phillip Rivers teams are, I think that's a really good, I thought it was a really good comparison. I'm curious to see where Carolina lands this year. I do agree that I think the offensive coordinator is going to be a big question mark. Chip Lindsey has not been innovative, maybe, so to speak. And so I'm curious how Carolina uses Drake May. I think that Longo did a pretty good job. And yeah, I don't know. That's interesting.
I think hits are going to also just catch up with him at some point, like for as many yards as he went and got running. I just see it coming back. I don't know. It's like Jordan Travis for me. It's like, I can't get on to the FSU bandwagon because I've seen him explode every single year with injuries and them crumple every time that happens. You know, I'm not going to sign on for, I mean, I'm going to take Clemson because of longevity, but I'm super skeptical. Jesus Christ. I cannot say that guy's name. Klubnik, Cade Klubnik, whatever his name is, Gabe,
yes,
Tabe, whatever. It's late. I don't know, man. I just think this is going to be another year where you're going to have a surprise team. I don't think it's going to be FSU. I don't think it's going to be UNC. I think it's going to be a really random team that pops up. Maybe it's us. Maybe it's Pitt. You know, these teams are going to falter. Now that the divisions are different, you know, the fact that Louisville can get access by having, you know, just utter crap to go through. I mean, they could be this year's UNC from last year.
Right.
Right. So somehow the coastal lives on in spirit for certain teams.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm not sure. I don't think Carolina will be that bad. I wouldn't put them in eighth. I think they'll be a little better than that. I think they just have talent. I think he's got BC too high, Pitt too high. It should be good. And then who knows before Florida State, right? Everybody's on that bandwagon, but we'll get to them in a minute. Dave was on the ACC Roadshow. I don't know if you watched that, but my biggest takeaway is it was a bunch of coach speak, which is fine. My biggest takeaway is how does my man not have a better video and microphone setup in 2023? Like, that's what I said in the pod chat. And they're like, what are you talking about? It's like, it looks like he's on a freaking Atari or something. Like, it's unbelievable how poor. And you'd think after the COVID year where everything was video related, somebody would say, hey, let's get my man a video camera and a light and a decent microphone so that he doesn't look like a clown.
Want people zooming in on his desk, seeing his notes, man.
Golly, it shouldn't be that hard. And somebody's like, well, Dave doesn't worry about that. I know Dave doesn't worry about it. He's got 100 staff members in that office. Somebody should say, let's fix this. Let's make this better. Appearance is everything.
Didn't we literally put in like a, doesn't Jeff Gravely sit at like a news desk?
We have a media room. Yeah.
You know, there is literally a place that they built because it was a part of the whole ACC network thing. So, yeah, I don't know.
Ridiculous.
I'm glad. And I also appreciate that the Wi-Fi is just so shitty there that the quality's bad. It's very nice.
I'm sure that's the excuse. I mean, my new MacBook has a better camera than whatever Dave's working on right now. Like, give him a 2023 MacBook. It'll be
better. He's got his Dell laptop from when he was in med school or trying to get a med school at Drake.
Probably. Tony Gibson had a press conference the other day, and his quote, which I thought was really interesting. We had some good players in the past. We had some good players who limited us in what they could do. We don't have that limitation right now. And I thought that was interesting because if you think about it, he's talking about guys that were really good at doing one thing. And in his defense, he's got dudes everywhere. I'm intrigued on who he's speaking of and who he's going to utilize in what manner. But I think the creativity, should be elevated a little bit. They've got the pieces. They got, the corners, and they got some D-line guys, which he said today, we've got eight guys we feel really good about. And I was like, whoa, eight that's deep.
Yeah.
And now how does he mix and match guys around, the linebackers, the safeties, and nickels? I think it's going to be interesting to have the guys that are, flexible enough to run different positions. I'm curious to watch how disruptive that defense can be this year.
Yeah, I think his comments were really about linebacker is my guess. And
probably
maybe cornerbacks, just they know that what they've got in Aiden White now and Shaim, and I think that's where it comes from. Maybe they're saying that about nickel. I mean, maybe they feel really good about Poogie. But I'm guessing they're talking about linebacker in particular. I think they're talking about Drake and Isaiah. And just that, Isaiah was really good in the run and more reliability in the pass. And so maybe they feel, Betty is taking over for him. Or is it Jalen Scott? Jalen Scott, yeah. So they probably just feel that they've got more athleticism. And then the question is, are the instincts there? Now, maybe he's saying, I don't care about the instincts. I can now call everything I need to call. That's great. Hopefully that doesn't mean that it's all corner blitzes all the time. I was listening to the IPS podcast about the D-line. And I was like, I'm not surprised he says that he's got eight guys. If he said he's got six guys, I'd believe him. I think there's all the compositions come together for that, for the defensive line. So I wonder if this is going to be the year where it's not just a run stopping defensive line, that we get more sacks out of them instead of having like the linebackers leading in sacks. I mean, they'll probably still lead in sacks, but you know, just one or two sacks a game from the defensive line is huge compared to the typical production they've gotten the last few years. So if the specialists can make an impact, that's great. Hibbler, you know, Potter, those guys that have come in, Trevally Price, right? I don't know. I'm very excited to see this defense, and that's why I'm still shocked with the win totals. If this defense is even 90% of what it was last year, any offense with a pulse is going to win a lot of games. So
this defense gets to open up against a first-time FBS quarterback. UConn announced that Joseph Fagano will be their starting quarterback. Joseph Fagano is a transfer from Maine last year, where he started five games, and his current record of 0-5. His stats, combined stats last year, 208 completions on 364 attempts. That's 57% completion percentage, 2,200 yards, 15 TDs, 6 interceptions.
Okay. I thought UConn had – I thought their starter last year got injured, and they were excited about having him back this year. So that's interesting that a transfer – oh, my gosh, here those transfers again – is going to make the impact. I'm not too worried. I forgot that Syracuse played UConn last year as well, and they pasted them. So I'm sure Anai knows what he's getting into. I'm sure Gibson is excited to have that for the starting game. I don't know. I know the ECU game is like in everyone's mind from last year. I don't think this is anywhere close to that.
I think this is. So people were talking about it where, and I've seen it on Twitter and some other places. I'm nervous that UConn is a trap game. And maybe they're right, but I feel like it's a lot of Chicken Little syndrome, because UConn is not ECU last year. ECU returning their like 12th year quarterback and a ton of depth and some good athletes and playing in a rival environment, right? In a rivalry game. I don't get the concern. I think that's just a lot of people being Chicken Little NC State fans, right? I think that's the concern.
Just don't let off the gas.
Yeah. My biggest concern is State doesn't execute as well given the new playbook, right? That's my biggest concern. I think State can win this game just giving it to Brandon Armstrong, letting him run all over the place.
Yeah.
Like if that is what it comes down to, I think they can win that way. Like, I'm pretty sure. UConn couldn't do anything against us last year. I don't think they got better. They lost people. They brought in this Joseph Fagano kid. I don't know. Like, I don't get people's concern with that game. So, yeah. Do you think – this is another question we talked about earlier in the podcast. Do you think they save the playbook for Notre Dame?
Man, I'm tired of this nonsense. I don't think there's saving a playbook. If you want to say, hey, we've installed stuff and we're confident in 80% this week, and so we're running with 80%, and we're going to keep working on the other wrinkles. Great. I mean, there is stuff you put together for certain teams. So it makes sense that there's little wrinkles. But I don't know. This idea that like teams just hold back 50% of the playbook to me is just bizarre, especially when you've got these coordinators who have been out there for a long time. Their concepts are well known. It's not rocket science.
You know what it is? It's NC State's offense for the last 10 years has been extremely vanilla. And that was people's justification for the vanilla offense. Like, yeah, we're just saving it for the next game. Like, no, dude, this is what you got. Like, this is what Tim Beck's rolling out there. And I think we're not saving any playbook. We might not run all the trick plays.
Yeah.
You know, if we have them. But yeah,
I just think people need to understand most teams are just boring. Like, it's just, it is what it is. Your team is not special. And unless you have dynamic playmakers, the playmakers make the plays look better than they are. A lot of times, everyone, you can tell what's coming. The defensive coordinator has a pretty good idea of what you're going to do. It's just, you've got a better playmaker. And so for years, we haven't had great playmakers. The years we did, like when we had Samuels and Hines and Harmon and Myers, right? Offense looked a lot more fun that year with Drinkwitz. Yeah. And then it looked a lot tougher the following year when you got a bunch of freshmen out there with Kitchings, right?
Yeah.
It's just get more athletes. And if you can't get better athletes, figure out how to put them in better space. And then your offense is whatever it is. It's that chocolate all the time. Your chocolate is just dark or light. I don't know, man. I don't understand the concept of, oh, we're playing it vanilla.
All right, here's a question for you from the peeps. I feel oddly confident about winning at Wake this year. Am I crazy?
I mean, do you believe in curses? I don't. I think we've just sucked for I just don't think we've been a very good football team and gone on the road and lost that team all the time. Yeah, I think we're going to beat them. I think we said two pods ago, we were kind of going through the schedule and said that's a win.
Yeah, I think it's okay to, again, don't be a Chicken Little, right? Don't, just because it's Wake Forest, don't bury your head and say we shouldn't win that game. I feel like we're a better team. Who knows by the time we play them what either team looks like, you know, from a, you know, injury standpoint or experience standpoint or whatever they have to go through. Wake just lost Donovan Green for a good chunk of the season, their best wide receiver. Everybody's sucking off Mitch Griffiths. You know, who knows what he actually does on the field. So I don't know. I don't think you're crazy, whoever you are. I forgot to put your name down.
Yeah, I just wish we had him earlier in the year.
Yeah. Here's another question. Our game against Duke is a huge trap game because it's at Duke, where the game day atmosphere will be dead. People underestimate Duke because it's Duke, and it's the week before Clemson. What's your response to that?
I think Duke's just a trap game because I don't think a lot of people watched them last year, and they've got a good quarterback, and they're going to be sound defensively. But I don't think it's a trap game. Just think if they're anywhere close to last year, they're just going to be a crafty team that you got to be disciplined against.
You know, their quarterback's good. He's for them. I think one of the weakest schedules in all of FBS. But at the same time, Duke does lead the all-time series against NC State, 41-36. But State has won 15 of the last 14. But Duke has won the last two, right? This game is always stupid close. It shouldn't be, but it is. It's unnecessarily close. I think it's a little different because, you know, somebody compared it to BC atmosphere. State's going to bring a ton of people to Durham. I think it's not the same. I don't think the correlation is there. I think State brings a lot of people. The week before Clemson is a concern, right? Overlooking Duke, play Clemson. But I don't think Duke is on our level yet. I do like Mike Elko. I think their quarterback's good. But, you know, that's another game that if we should be favored in that game, even though it's on the road.
Yeah, I mean, I know people said, like, we're going to be overlooking it. But, right, we play Marshall the week before, so I'd be thinking we're overlooking Marshall, looking forward to a conference game instead. True. Right, like I don't feel like we sleepwalk through games. I think we've had some really unfortunate timing of certain games in the past for us, injuries, things like that. But I mean, if you go back and look at Duke's schedule last year, I remember when Elko was getting all the, you know, the hype for getting the coach of the year vote, you know, I was like, well, I think Dave Dorn probably did a better job, quite frankly, played more difficult teams. And, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Next question.
Yeah.
I like where we stand with every position group. Even wide receivers sound like they are coming together. But what about depth at each of the groups? QB depth concerns me. QB3, QB4. I'll answer this that part. If you're playing your third and fourth string quarterback, you shouldn't be winning anyway. But how do you feel about the overall depth everywhere else?
How do I feel? Sorry, I'm bidding on a table saw right now on an auction here in Richmond. And someone just outbid me.
Experience to UConn.
I'd rather be experiencing the pure horsepower of a saw stop table saw than sitting on a bus with college kids. Maybe that's just me. Can you read the question again? Who is it we feel comfortable about, or at least comfortable about
position-wise? I like where we stand with every position group. Even wide receivers sound like they're coming together. But what about depth at each of the position groups?
I mean, there's depth everywhere except for the offensive line. And, you know, is it super proven? No. Right? Like, you can find all kinds of – you can poke holes in at running back. You can poke holes at tight end, like Trent Penix. Is he going to survive? H-back, right? Who's going to be – the backup Penix. No one beyond Keon Lassane has really played at wide receiver significantly, and his output last year was not extremely high. So I think you can find question marks over the place, but there are tons of bodies to play, and there's a lot of young talent to be excited about, especially at wide receiver. I'd say I'm more worried than anything about offensive line. That was a position where I would have sacrificed maybe one recruit if I could have got another transfer. Oh, well, but that's me.
Thayer was our guy that on the trick play, we were talking about trick plays earlier. Thayer was our guy on that trick play they liked where they would throw pass downfield. Does an I use that play or something similar? And if so, who's our guy this season that makes that throw?
Oh, I'm sorry. Someone outbid me on a freezer that I'm bidding on.
Oh, good Lord. Pay attention, man. Christ almighty. Who's our trick play guy? Thayer's gone.
It's probably Julian Gray. I mean, are we talking about throwing the ball? Jeez. MJ Morris? Can we just get both quarterbacks in at the same time? I mean, Brandon Armstrong's athletic enough. You could just slide him over to tight end, right?
I think you'll look at somebody a little merge, probably a guy we don't know about, but somebody who played quarterback in high school. It's usually how this works. And I think that's where they'll come. You know, Jacoby Myers.
I'm trying to think. I don't think we've got anyone that's like a straight up QB conversion though. So yeah, that'd be interesting. I mean, I don't know. I hope we don't need as many trick plays to score. That's how I feel.
That's probably the right way to look at this. Yeah, I agree.
I hope we don't throw it to Icky. You know, it's stuff like that. I'm tired of us doing the low prop stuff, even though they probably has to have like the highest QBR in NC State history.
Certainly. All right, let's get out of here. Will is bidding on random things on eBay. Who knows what's coming next? I got nothing else for you.
It's a local auction. It's not eBay, but
oh, sorry, way better. Thank you. Way better.
It's just down the street, man.
Oh yeah. All right, that's all I got. We'll be back at some point. I got some cool things coming for the pod, for the site. I know we got a couple articles coming out this week, but yeah. So pay attention to it. And as always, thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting us. And go Pack.
Yeah, thanks. Go Pack. I was raised by the waves.